This week on Writers, Inc.
If you go in thinking, oh, I need to do something, like what would my audience want? What should I give them? What would be, should I write about this or that because this or that is buzzy or, you know, popular right now? That's a mistake.
J.K. Rowling was nearly homeless when she wrote the first Harry Potter book. Stephen King penned Carrie in a small desk wedged between a washer and dryer. James Patterson worked in advertising and famously crafted the Toys R Us theme song long before becoming an author. Join New York Times bestseller J.D. Barker and a panel of industry powerhouses as they pull back the curtain on some of the world's most prolific authors. Where did they start? What is their process? The biggest names in publishing all have origin stories, all have tips and secrets. What does it take to consistently top the bestseller lists and become a household name? Get your notepad out. School's in session. This is Writers, Inc.
Hi, it's Christine Daigle.
I'm Jenna Brown.
I'm Kevin Tomlinson.
And I'm J.D. Barker. Welcome to Writers, Inc. Jenna, how is the water heater?
Oh, my God. You know, I've never hated water heaters more than I hate them in my life. So we bought this house, I don't know, 10 years ago, and it was a new build. This is our fourth water heater in 10 years. This is not normal. And no one can tell us why. Vegas has really hard water, but we have a water softener in our home.
But is it in line before the water heater though? Have you made sure that,
no,
that
but
that's
after, but it goes to, the, yeah. So it goes to the water
it feeds
heater.
The, okay.
Yeah. Like it's a whole home. I've had like four different companies come out. No one can, we test the water. We tested the pressure. We tested like all the different things. I've interrogated all my neighbors. None of them have this problem.
Yeah. Did it flood the house?
It flooded the garage. Every time it goes, it floods the garage.
Okay. But just the garage. That's not quite
as
bad.
Yeah, but it's still kind of a pain, you know, because we do have like storage. And so it's just, I don't know. It's just, you have to move like all the shelving, you know, so that it doesn't rust and get, so it's just a ginormous. So we went with a tankless water heater, which has just been an ordeal and a half. They had to come out and redo the gas line. And then they had to redo the redone gas line. Anyway.
I had one of
those.
Those
are honestly better though.
House. Yeah. I miss my tankless water heater.
Well, that's what we got when we moved into this place. But what they didn't do, so normally they put those somewhere inside, like inside the garage, whatever. They decided to put ours right outside the garage.
Oh my God.
So when we have freezes, guess what freezes up?
Your tankless water heater. That's
bad
design.
I'm going to build like a little, I'm calling it a house. I'm going to build this thing around it that's insulated.
Yeah.
That has like an incandescent light bulb inside of it. So
can you just move it? Like it shouldn't be too hard to plumb it in the, like it should be in the garage wherever your water heater was.
Yeah. So we built the home. So that's where they put it when they designed it. It is on the other side of basically what would have been the water heater closet. And we use it as a storage closet. So I could relocate it, but it would cost a fortune to do it. So cheaper for me to just build a little mini house around it.
Probably. Yeah. Because what we learned was that you have to actually have a dedicated gas line. And I don't know if that's different per state. They said that that's a Nevada thing. Because where the water heater goes, that gas line is like a half inch or something, and it has to be one inch, and then I don't know. Anyway, it's just been a whole thing.
I'm sorry about your water heater saga.
I mean, we have hot water, so I should not complain. It's not like we have been out of hot water this whole time. Like they were able to get it like temporarily installed and fixed. And so I'm just like, you know, every time I use hot water, I'm like, I'm just so grateful I have hot water. I'm so grateful I have hot water. And I'm hoping that alleviates all the frustrations that have.
Yeah. Those things, they never break quietly. And it's always one of those deals where you step into a room into like 2 inches of water and you're like, crap.
Yeah.
Now you know what your day is going to look like.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I know. And it never happens at a convenient time. Like I was in the middle of a meeting.
Yeah.
And heard it and then like went down and it's just like a river
Oh.
in your garage.
So, speaking of inconvenient timing, so about a week ago, at like 3 in the morning, suddenly this fire alarm goes off in our house,
Oh
and
no.
the smoke detectors, right?
Yeah.
So, and it startles us, startles the dog. Can't find any source for it. It stopped. So, we were hoping maybe it was just some errant thing. And then we went back to bed. We get up probably around 9 that morning. It does it again. And then we notice it starts to do it like every few hours, And I started swapping out batteries, trying to swap it out. And we thought that handled it. And then it did it again. But it turns out there's like this, because of the type of system it is, you have to go through this reset sequence that syncs up all the smoke detectors.
Wow.
So it was this big elaborate thing, and swapping out the batteries was the biggest pain in my butt I've
At
had
least you didn't
in a long
smash
time.
it. My husband smashed our
That was
carbon
next.
monoxide detector because
Yeah,
he couldn't
my
figure out
husband
how to
did
make it stop.
the same thing. That was coming next, because I'm
Well,
like, there's no scenario in this house where if there was a fire, we'd be trapped. Like there's a way out, and unless we decided let's sleep in the master closet tonight, there's just no scenario where we wouldn't be able to escape.
Yeah. Well,
So
the carbon monoxide ones are annoying because I learned they're actually not connected to a battery. So like when you get the carbon monoxide one, it has the battery in it, but I guess that's for the smoke detector portion. But like
yeah.
the carbon monoxide portion, I don't know. It like has an expiration date. And once that expires, like you have to take the whole thing down. But of course, nothing ever goes out at like 2 o'clock in the
Yeah.
afternoon when
No,
everyone's
it's
like
yeah.
calm and
So what you're
able to
saying is
think.
he was right to smash it because there was no saving it.
That's
And then
what
he had to look at
I
it.
applaud
Okay.
him for his
I'm not
ingenuity.
going to tell him he was right. He's not going to hear
Yeah,
it. Oh, I actually encouraged my husband. I was like, I don't care how you make it stop, just make it stop.
you all need to get a Nest. These things are super polite. Like ours went off the other day and it was like smoke detected in the kitchen. An alarm will sound. It is going to be loud. And like it, and
Wow.
you can hear that like through the like we've got like 20 of
Oh
them in the house,
boy.
so like every one of them is talking to you, but like
I
it
just.
tells you where it's detecting stuff, and then there's an app, so like if a battery starts dying, it tells you what to
Yeah.
replace.
Well, that's.
And it actually has a quiet feature, so like it won't like alert you to low batteries in the middle of the night, which is like my big thing, because like it's like
Wow.
you said, it's always 3 in the morning when those
Every
things
time?
start chirping.
Every
Yeah.
time.
Look, I'm not a Luddite by any stretch, but I think we've become soft thanks to technology.
Yeah.
I grew up, I mean, I think the first 25, almost 30 years of my life, I never had a smoke detector, never had a dishwasher,
Oh
never,
no. My
never
favorite
had
was
any of that
my
stuff.
cousins. So they're like my second cousins. I don't know how this works. Kids wanted to know why someone was pushing their car and why they didn't just get a new car. And I'm like, "Oh, you've never seen anyone push a car before." Like that used
Oh,
to
right.
be
Yeah.
commonplace, you know.
I mean, that was how
Especially
you
when
got
you're a
some of them
teenager.
started. I
Yeah, exactly.
had to drive mine like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Stick my feet through the bottom.
I had a friend that had the bottom was chewed out. Like it was
Yeah,
just
we
rusted
did.
away and he would drive
Yeah,
it.
we did. I didn't. I went to high school with some folks. I grew up out in the country, okay? So,
Greater Nevada is basically country. We had all that. Like your teenagers, you were lucky to get a car that was like, basically running with shoestring and bubble gum.
Yeah. Shoestrings.
Shoestring.
Fancy.
Fancy. I work with a bunch
Well.
of animals.
All right. Well, we should probably, speaking of animals, get
Yeah.
into today's news.
Well.
I'm not going to, I need to dial back that segue because I don't want to piss off James Patterson. Because first up, James Patterson offers new writers up to $50,000 to finish their books. After years of giving millions of dollars to literacy programs, bookstore employees, and librarians, James Patterson has now launched an initiative on behalf of emerging authors. Patterson announced the first 12 recipients of grants from his, quote, Go Finish Your Book campaign. Authors each will receive up to $50,000 to help them complete their manuscript. Patterson's new program was organized in partnership with PEN America, the Authors Guild, and the Iowa Writers Workshop, among other organizations. Good for him.
So this really lit up my
Yeah.
inbox. Everybody and their mother, like they're usually asking me like, "Hey, how do I co-author with Patterson?" Like I get those all the time, but like this one, when they announced it, I probably got like 50 emails yesterday. So apparently, like all the winners for this year have already been picked. So like this year is out. But if you go to these various organizations, I'm guessing this is something he's going to continue doing, so you can apply it to it for next year. But they rolled it out kind of quietly. But he gave away $500,000, just like that to help writers finish up their books, which is awesome.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
It is cool. I mean, I wish there were more things like this because, one of the hardest things, especially for emerging authors, is books take time to write. I don't know if anyone's aware of that. I mean, it takes a lot of time, and I think there is actually some sort of a benefit to having to squeeze a book in between, the day job and the kids and things like that. But, if you had the opportunity to take a month or two or a couple of months off or a whole year off and actually just write the book and focus on the book, I mean, that would make a lot of dreams come true and we'd see a lot of new art emerge, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I like to see people work hard for it, because like the ones who really want to get it done, and like
Yeah,
and this is
that's
good, but
true.
like this is a great way I think to give somebody a launching point. But the problem that I see with it, and I don't want to push back on it, but you're handing somebody a check to finish up this book. They still don't have a publishing deal. They still don't know where the next check is coming from. And if you think about the way the system works now, like you force yourself to get that book done, only a handful of people get over that finish line, so they're tenacious. Then they get the publishing deal, and then they've got you line up the next book and the next book and the next book. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I mean, it's definitely a good thing. But I'm not sure how it's gonna help people after they get that first book finished.
Hopefully there's some kind of aftercare project from those associations that it's associated with to help navigate publishing. So that would be
That's what
nice.
I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
From a neurological perspective, or maybe it's not neurological, but I know that, the struggle is actually where like growth happens. Like, and it's actually really important for developing a lot like self-esteem, and you have to struggle, which I know nobody likes to hear, and it's not like a popular thing, but the struggle is actually more important than the finishing. Like, to struggle and then finish is really important in giving you the confidence and competence to, continue to grow and
Yeah,
get better.
I agree.
That said, I'm looking for that application link.
Since I'm famous for my hot takes, here's my hot take on that. Neurology is not real.
Oh
All
God,
right, let's
Kevin,
go
let you not started with me this week.
into but humans are real. And this is a great story because I was literally just talking to somebody about something like this yesterday. So certifying human-made writing free for publishers. Verify My Writing is being offered free to agents and publishers. The email from Publishers Marketplace states VMW uses LLM and AI technology to scan documents, providing accurate, easy to verify scored certifications. It's easy to integrate into submission and query flows. VMW reduces legal and reputation risk while cutting down on all the AI queries you can't use anyway.
I have
So.
such mixed
Yeah.
feelings
Concerns.
about this. Like,
I think I do too after reading it.
I understand, like, the obviously AI, but there's been a lot of things, like companies were using AI scanners for resumes, and they got in a lot of trouble because, they weren't getting any qualified applicants because, the AI is just looking for keywords. And so if you do include a keyword or you don't include a keyword, it's going to flag it or dismiss it, or and so there's kind of a danger there of like, what if you accidentally use a word that they have decided means is AI? And I guess I worry about it too, because everyone now assumes if you use an M dash, you've used AI, which is the
Right,
most
which is so
ridiculous.
ridiculous. Like, remember all the memes on social media about authors like going
But
to the
people,
grave with their M dashes in their
that's
hand?
me.
And
I mean, like,
now you're
come on.
literally being told, in fact, I have a freelance place where I can't use M dashes anymore
I love
because
my M dash.
readers assume that now that means AI. And
Never giving up the M dash.
Right, but now if you query and you have an M dash in your query, you know, it's these tiny little things, and I hate that we are
Yeah.
giving up our brains. And I know that they're overloaded, and I know they get thousands of submissions, but
Look, most of us weren't using them anyway.
wait, no, I want
So.
to jump on
Great.
that because I have multiple concerns. First is Jenna's concerns, and I'm on the Author Guild website and I read their forum, and there was an author who has been an author for 30 years, and I don't want to identify, but submitted a short story that got rejected for using AI. And this
Yeah.
is an older person who has never used AI. And they're
Yeah.
like, what do I do? So
Right.
that's like danger number one. They put it through some software and rejected a story that was not AI. My other concern is that they are putting our manuscripts into AI.
Yeah.
Yeah,
At
there you
least
go. That's
a
a
query
good
letter.
point.
What?
At least a query letter, which is now your idea, and now your idea
Yeah.
is like floating
Well,
out there in the ether.
that's interesting, by the way, because a lot of those publishers have rushed to do a Band-Aid kind of like contractual, like we'll never use AI, we forbid scanning the documents, and so they're just bypassing their own contracts if they're.
Yeah. And the other
Sorry, JD,
issue
I
that I
didn't mean to
had is
cut you off.
I actually went on the website and looked at it because I'm like, if you're offering this free, why? Because nothing is ever
Right.
free.
Yeah. Yep.
So the cost is coming to us. If you think about the number of publishers and agents at the top of the pyramid and the number of writers, so if they're using this, then now writers have to put their manuscripts in because you know you're going to freak out because of all of these false identifications. So if you're feeding it 50,000 to 200,000 words, which is a manuscript length, it's $65. And then they rate you green, yellow, or red. And if you want the verification, it's another $10. So they're going to make $75 a pop off of authors, which again is just author
Yeah.
exploitation, and I just don't like it at all.
Yeah,
Well, I think
I'm the
they're trying,
same.
they're really exploiting. I mean, that's an obvious problem, but they're exploiting another problem, which is the publisher contracts on the trad side
Yeah.
prohibit the use of AI.
Right.
So, agent, so if an author isn't honest with the agent and they submit something that has AI in it and the agent passes it on, it sells, that publisher puts it out. Now you've got a problem with that publisher, but then it gets exponentially worse when you start getting into foreign translations because those foreign countries
Yeah.
have that same caveat because nobody knows where the copyright is going to land on all this.
Right.
So they need a solution to the problem. I don't know what that solution is. I think Christine's point is probably the scariest one. Like these people are making a buck off of it and it's coming off the writers in the end. But they are going to need some kind of screening tool because it's getting to the point. Like if you talk to an agent, they are getting a ridiculous amount of AI generated content. And for the most part, you can tell by reading it because it's
Oh, yeah.
garbage.
100%.
But that's going to change. A year or two down the
Yeah.
road, that garbage is going to be acceptable prose, and before you know it, it's going to be writing some eloquent text. So they need to
Right.
get ahead of this somehow.
So I think, though, doesn't that sort of make it a problem that solves itself then? Because if the AI generated book is indistinguishable, you couldn't tell by reading it. There's nothing about it that sounds jinky, crappy, or whatever. What's the problem then? And
Well,
then,
the problem is from a legal standpoint is the copyright.
right. But if they're
They
not,
still haven't
if,
decided who owns that copyright if there's
yeah.
AI content,
How are
and
they
that very.
detecting? Right. I'm saying though, like, how are they detecting that it's AI at that point? Like, what's the, unless someone comes forward and confesses.
Yeah, no, I don't know how they catch it, but the point is they're very scared of legal action on any front, so if there's a hint of that, then that's a problem. And
Yeah.
the copyright laws they're different in every single country, so the burden of proof is going to be put on the author. They're going to keep running it through whatever tool. This week it's this tool, next week it'll be a different tool, it'll be another tool after that. They're going to keep running them through those, and when it comes back with some kind of false positive, it's going to be on the author to prove that it's wrong.
Which,
I
so how do
don't
you do
you
that?
it's also AI though. So like all these people who are like, opposed to AI, like they don't want AI writing, like you're supporting
And
you're
training
supporting
AI.
the thing, yeah, and training it and encouraging other people, because for the AI to detect AI writing, like it has to know what human
Right.
writing looks like. Like it's like the most it doesn't make any sense. It's the most illogical thing in the world. I hate it. Thanks. I hate it.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Snake eating its own tail. That's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 11 Reader launches direct sales for AI-generated audiobooks. All right. I'm in some sort of clown world nightmare, is what I'm in. 11Labs' new 11 Reader storefront lets authors and publishers sell AI-narrated audiobooks directly to listeners, paying 60% of net sales with no exclusivity. You can spin up an audiobook in minutes with free tools. Paid plans add multi-voice narration, music, and MP3 downloads. It's live on iOS slash Android with thousands of Indian small press titles. The payout beats typical platforms that offer around 40% exclusive or around 20% for wide.
No more AI.
Yeah, I mean, I,
I
you know,
don't
I'm,
even here's I mean
yeah.
I still have the same problem with this. Like if it worked, it's one thing, but like I can't listen to it, and maybe I'm it's just me, but like my brain just tunes it out. Like it's missing some kind of thing, and it's like listening to white noise to me when an AI is reading something. It's missing that human element. At some point maybe they'll figure out how to get that in there.
I think it's just too
This
perfect. It's like it's too,
too
even if
perfect.
it, like they try to do the cadence and like the pauses, like it's just like
Yeah.
there's no like predictability, I guess, to being human. I mean, there is, but you know what I mean? Like when you're going to take a breath or when you're going to get something caught in your throat. There's just something. AI just doesn't have that, I think, is what it is.
The one
Yet.
concern I saw about this, about the direct sell, is again the fragmentation of where listeners are buying, because it's another place you have to go to get stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like social
Well.
media.
Well, before we move on from the news, we
Okay.
one this is our sneaky Easter egg news item. If you did not listen to the last episode all the way to the end, past the little end credits and everything, then you missed out on a surprise. So, a dedication to our editor Alex to go back and listen. You have a story. Share it with the world. Ingram Spark offers everything you need to publish, promote, sell, and print your book. Reach millions of readers worldwide with powerful tools created for independent authors. Get started for free at ingramspark.com/learn more.
And with that, JD, who's up this week?
This week, we've got Sophia Efdiamatu on. She's the head of writer relations for Substack. She's here to tell us about the platform and how authors can use it to further their author business. Here she is, Sophia.
I'm glad that you're here with me, Sophia, that you are representing something that I pimp you guys all over the place. I am constantly telling writers to be on Substack, to use you guys, and I'm also a podcaster on Substack, so you get a lot of press from me. So thank you
Well,
for dropping in with us on Writers Inc.
thank you for having me, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
And I've been looking forward to this as well, because we have talked about you guys quite a bit on the show, and you. So just to, I know JD's already introduced you, but you're the head of writer relations and events at Substack.
That's right.
So, all right, we were in the presence of royalty.
That I'm also the queen of Substack. That's
You're the
how
queen of Substack, and
I'm
I knew
going.
that about you as soon as you showed up. So I guess the first place to start here, really, as writers, so this show is aimed at authors, right? But you guys are kind of a unique spot for writers to kind of showcase their work and even monetize that. I'm real curious, how did Substack get a start? Like, where did this come from?
So this was actually the brainchild of a writer and an engineer, if I can call Chris that. He would identify as a bad engineer himself, but I'm not one to judge. And the story that I've heard be repeated quite often is that Chris thought that there was something broken with the media ecosystem. Just as a reader, he's an
Yeah.
avid reader, and he wrote an angry essay about it, kind of like a Jerry Maguire moment, back in 2017. And he shared it with his good friend Hamish, who is a writer. and an editor. And Hamish told him, well, that's a great piece of writing, but you're not really offering any solutions. You're kind of whining about something that everyone knows is problematic. And it would be more interesting if you tried to rewrite this essay offering a solution. And Chris, in an attempt to offer a solution, he created Substack, basically. The idea of Substack was born. And he partnered with Hamish to make it a reality. So that's the true story of how it came to be.
The origins.
The
Yeah. When
origin.
was this? When did it come up?
Well, Substack started in 2017. I'm
Okay.
not sure how, whether they started talking that year or even before that, but I'm pretty sure that that's and it probably all happened very quickly, actually, since the idea was conceived. And they found the first writer to collaborate with in order to build it together, because they needed someone to tell them exactly what he would need to make this a viable enterprise for him. And that was Bill Bishop, actually.
Yeah,
And
I'm sorry,
he's
go ahead.
patient zero. Yeah.
It's
And
patient zero.
I should mention the third co-founder, who they needed someone to actually build the thing
Yeah.
once they had the idea. And that's Jay Raj, and who's just a genius in terms of building things. So they had to convince him to do this because he was about to go on a journey of self-discovery.
Yeah.
And so he did it, and they built Substack. Yeah.
And I feel like it came into my sort of awareness around 2020. It just seemed like that it was all over the place around that point. And I had no idea what a Substack was when I first heard of it.
Having been at Substack for 4 years now, I've heard the line, oh, Substack is blowing up right now, like every year, every year. The moment someone becomes aware of it, they just start seeing it everywhere. It's that early 2020 was a period of great growth for us. More and more big names started joining Substack then and creating Substacks. And yeah, so it started entering kind of like the public consciousness at that point.
What do you think was the sort of breakover moment there? Like what made it kind of catch fire?
I think there were a couple of things that happened simultaneously, and one kind of accelerated the other. It was the pandemic. We were in the middle of the pandemic at that point. So from the consumer side of the business, people were locked in and they were hungry for information and they were reading. So there was that. And then at the same time, there was a bit of a seismic effect happening in the media ecosystem. And many writers thought that independence was the way to go. And it especially during those times, right? Emotions were running high, and I think that inspired many people to finally take the terrifying jump, in some cases, of quitting their jobs and leaving stability behind for independence, and that made Substack kind of part of the zeitgeist.
Yeah, I was working with a publishing company that was, that assisted independent authors. Independent publishing was very much a part of my landscape at that point. And so I remember when I first encountered Substack, I thought this is perfect for that market, the indie author market. Anyone really. I mean, you got guys like James Patterson who has joined
Oh,
the ranks
exactly.
now.
Absolutely. Yes. But back then, especially for reporters and journalists, it was, in some cases, it was a big change in their lives to leave established, well-known publication to go do their own thing.
We should probably loop back just a smidge, because we didn't actually discuss, and it baffles me that there could still be people who don't know what Substack is at this point. But what is Substack, and how does it work?
So Substack is an app and a publishing platform where creators and writers and artists of all kinds can connect directly with their audience, publish their content in any form they want, from text to video to audio. Podcasters are there like yourself. So, and connect directly with their audience and monetize that relationship. So through paid subscriptions.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much in a nutshell of that what that is.
Yeah.
It's a network, it's a social media kind of ecosystem. It's many things in one. So it's a publishing platform, it is a social network, and through the ecosystem, you get from, if you're a creator and a writer, you get exposed to a wider audience
Yeah.
and more people who are going to hopefully fall in love with what you're doing and get on your list, even if it's for free for initially, and then upgrade to a paid subscription eventually. And from consumers like me, who know, who just want to discover something more interesting than what algorithms might be serving us on other platforms. It's a good place to discover new voices.
Yeah. Do you have any favorites right now? And will I blush when you start
I
listing
well, you are
people
my favorite, obviously.
off?
It is a very difficult question for me to answer because, for one, I subscribe to, I just checked today out of curiosity, to 425 Substacks, and some of them I work with, and some of them I've just discovered on the platform, like everyone else. And it's impossible to resist getting on that list to see what this person is doing. It is very hard to answer because some of these people that I work with have become friends and are my favorite. Or others, I've just, as a reader, I got to know them as a reader and upgraded to a paid subscription. So there are too many to name.
I understand. That's fine. One of the things that I really, aside from being able to monetize it, which is just remarkable on its own, that I mean, there's nothing else out there that I can think of that does this in that way. Closest might be YouTube, but they have criteria you have to meet before you can ever receive their pitiful little amount.
And also, and I never could figure out YouTube more of as a viewer. I would subscribe to things and then I would never see them really again. Like, so I don't quite know how it works, but it's different.
Yeah, you're in good company. Nobody seems to know how that works. One of the things that I really appreciate, though, is unlike YouTube or any other social media platform or blogging platform out there, you own that list. You guys are actually helping. One of the things that we preach to authors from day one, as soon as the author emerges from their author egg into the world, we're telling them, you should have a mailing list. You should own that list because that's where your best marketing is going to happen there. You guys have a tool that is all about that, using the thing that writers, covet most or are most prideful about, which is the writing itself. What are you seeing? Like, why? Most everyone else would try to own all that. Why is that part of your philosophy that the writer owns their list?
So you touched on something very important there, and it's a more complicated question than you might even realize asking
That seems likely.
it for something. Because on the one hand, what you said is of all importance, right? The ownership. As a writer, as a creator, a Substack is your private property. And we have no claims on it. The email list, the content, and the monetization, the payment relationship, right? You also have essentially the credit cards and all of that. So if you from one moment to the next, if you decided to leave the platform, you can take everything with you. And which is a very precarious business to build, as again, you smartly pointed out that why would we do that, right? Because in theory, from one moment to the next, we could go out of business if we lose, you know, the very top publishers, which could be in the thousands. It doesn't matter, but well, there are several reasons for that. Number one, we believe in independence, right? What, to go back to Chris's main kind of, what is the solution here to the problem of the media ecosystem? Is that from both reader and writer, and I'm using those as universal terms, no matter what you're creating and you're putting out in the world, they both should have that independence and freedom of thought to choose. They have to make a choice, right? And if you want to be there, you have to own it, basically, in order to be truly free. So to put out what you want to say and have complete access to your audience, and from the audience side, to choose to be there and consume whatever you put out and have that liberty.
Yeah.
As the producer of that content, you must own it and you must own that relationship. And without that independence, you cannot have true freedom. I'm not just talking about freedom of speech. I'm talking creative freedom, that delicious thing that all publishers who use Substack often discover after they start doing it. Because when they have that freedom, they don't really depend on anyone except their audience who's there. They are seeing it and they're there for them to support them. Then it unlocks something in them. It really unlocks a creativity that I have not witnessed in anywhere else in publishing that I've worked in. It's a terrifying thing, you know, but at the same time, it's quite powerful. And I know that from having worked with writers for over the course of 4 years now, they end up doing their best work because of that freedom.
I have to say, like, there are other platforms out there that I've tried over the years. You know, I've been blogging since before they even had a term for it. You know, I was doing that online sort of manually for a long time. There's others. I don't know if you consider any of these competitors or whatever, but like Medium and things like that. And I've never had an experience that was as streamlined as what I get with Substack, and is as direct. Like, there's no barriers. There's no one trying to stand between me and that audience. That's the way I feel about it. Yeah.
And you're not trying, you know, with aggregators, even with Medium and everything, you don't really feel that connection with your audience, right? With your readers.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel there's an intimacy in this model that doesn't quite exist somewhere else. And it's really simple. It's that thing that Mary Gaitskill has described as zapping into people's brains directly. In a way, that's how she has described what it feels like to send out a post on her Substack. And it's true from the receiver side, whether you receive that post in your inbox, in the privacy of your inbox, or in the app, or anywhere else, it still feels very personal.
Yeah.
It feels like she's speaking directly to you. And that's why I think eventually, you know, people upgrade with a paid subscription and all of that. It's mostly because it's kind of Pavlovian. They start developing this bond with this voice, and they want to reward it and exercise their own agency for it to continue to exist in the world.
Yeah. When I first started everything, I was trying to figure it all out, and I set up my first paid subscription stuff. You know, I had this strong impulse from my background, like, okay, I'd better offer something special for the paid subscribers, you know, to entice them. And I did that for a while, and it did produce results. But then I had to stop that for a bit and focus on other things, and ended up noticing that people were, transitioning to paid subscriptions anyway. even though I wasn't promising anything, wasn't offering anything. And at this point, like, I don't do anything. I rarely do anything special. They just come support me.
You know, well, that is the typical model. I mean, famously, I think Heather Cox Richardson, which is one of the top, Substacks out there, doesn't lock anything at all. It's all free. You can consume it for free. People pay for love. They truly, it is, if you're not giving them that option, you're depriving them of a privilege as well, right? Because it's their only way, as I said, to communicate to you that they want you to keep going.
So, all right, what are you, because you're an insider, you have, I'm sure, seen a lot of success stories and a lot of people who've just kind of maybe blown it, So what are some things? First, let's talk about, like, what are things people should watch out for? Like, tactics you shouldn't try, or buttons you shouldn't push to grow an audience there, or whatever. Some cautionary tales.
Truly, I think the cautionary tale would be to not try and hack it, because there's no such thing. I think people have been conditioned to think that way from forms of communication like social media. It's kind of like, oh, what does the algorithm want me to do? What, and I always tell writers to just let go of all that. It's the hardest thing for them to do, by the way. It is the hardest thing. And that's why I think once you have to start, you have to start doing it in order to understand all the advice that I'm going to give you. If you hear it now, you'll think you understand it, but you actually, I bet you won't. So basically, if you go in thinking, oh, I need to do something, like what would my audience want? What should I give them? What would be, should I write about this or that because this or that is buzzy or, popular right now? That's a mistake, actually. So people subscribe to a consciousness. They subscribe, it's very personality driven. And if they like that consciousness, they're going to follow it anywhere, right? But they can also here have a very strong detection of bullshit. Like if you try to sell them something, they're not going to buy it. It's more when it, you actually, the solution is in what you described as your own experience, that initially you were trying to think of something special to do, blah, blah, and you're like, and now I'm not doing anything, I'm just doing my thing. So I know it sounds a bit cliche to say, but doing your thing is what works at Substack, because everyone who's there is there for you. That's what they're actually communicating to you by clicking subscribe. Even if it's for free, they actually are telling you with that, I want to hear from you. And with a paid subscription, is they're communicating their love and that they love you exactly $5 a month more than any other person on this platform. Or however much you're charging. So they're encouraging you essentially to just do to give them your best work. What does that mean though? It just means, to give them the truth as you see it at any given point in time, which could change tomorrow. But that's, here you're free to do this, right? That's what we were talking about before. So just do that, lean into that. I tell people don't overthink it, and I mean that. Don't overthink about hacks or how to do it and all that. Just let go. The readers will come in and you can trust that they will stick with you. And if they don't like what you're doing, they're just going to unsubscribe and you're getting rid of the passersby. And those who remain on your list, they're really there because they like you. And that list is just going to keep on growing. Having said that, I do think a certain cadence is good to keep, especially if you're going to charge for subscriptions and do this more professionally. If you're not charging anything, you can write once a year if you want to. But even so, I would say keeping that list alive and that muscle alive is to your benefit. And to your benefit as a writer too, or as a creator. Sometimes force yourself to do that especially when you don't feel like doing it, is sometimes when the best things come out.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It's been interesting to me because I'm a novelist first, right? I write thriller novels. This is a different type of writing, and it's the kind of thing I've always engaged in one form or another. But because this platform has such easy discoverability, I get much more feedback on what I'm producing,
Exactly.
and it's a chance for me to stretch my legs. In a different way. I mean, I really enjoy it, and everyone seems to really love what I'm producing. So what?
Exactly. And we get you the audiences also that, I mean, you have your audience, you're going to get a bigger audience thanks to Substack, you know, and you can trust that audience that they're there because they like you and not because someone served it to them.
Or because you somehow gamed or tricked them into
Exactly.
joining,
Exactly.
right? Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you guys have over the years you started adding some things that are aimed more at a general creator rather than simply writers. But things that I think personally and I use personally the that are that can expand any writer's platform, any writer's audience. And that's things like, you've got podcasts, you've got video, there's a and things are kind of growing and evolving. So what's the I mean, what's sort of the logic behind that? Like, why evolve it from a strictly, written platform to more of a multimedia platform?
Well, why have an iPhone instead of a regular phone, right?
Right. I should
And that's
say I'm not opposed to any of it. I'm just curious.
it's more and frankly, but that's how we describe it's kind of, we're handing you an iPhone and you can still just use it to make phone calls, which
Right.
is sending out your newsletter in pure text form, you know, and it will work perfectly just for that. But you have a super tool in your hands. Essentially, to build your own media empire on it.
Right.
So why limit something when we can just create more potential for you? And the data shows that those writers who take more advantage of, well, the app and all the features in the that you know are just nicer to use in the app, like the chat. Because people are just so used to consume that kind of text thread in on their phones, and who incorporate audiovisual elements on their Substacks and create a richer experience for their audience, because it's all about this connection that they have with a mind that they love and that feeds their own mind, and now they get to interact with that mind in all these different ways, and the experience becomes more and more and more personal. And the data shows that, you know, those Substacks who just take full advantage of our offerings actually grow fast.
Yeah,
So
I feel like I'm probably not utilizing everything I could, but I'm slowly stepping up, I've got
oh
now,
well, but that's the thing, you can, you know, you can use whatever we're basically offering you everything, you know, and you can use whatever is right for you at any given moment. So
Now, I would be remiss if I didn't pose a question that Christine Daigle, one of the hosts, made me promise I would ask, because she likes to listen to the podcasts on Substack,
well, good.
and she confesses that maybe there's something she's doing wrong. So you can tell me.
Okay.
She gets frustrated because she has to, when she's playing a podcast, if she leaves and comes back, she has to remember where she left off and find it. Is there a way for her to
Oh
and I
gosh.
know you're not tech support, but since
No,
we're here.
we are all tech support at Substack. Well, that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen actually. So perhaps after this call, we can troubleshoot a little bit because,
That's fine. I know I
yeah.
didn't want to put you on spot or anything. I just told her
No.
I would ask you, and I figured, well, why not ask in the middle of the interview and just
It's funny
embarrass
because like
everybody?
I'm having a bit of the opposite problem. Like it just picks up exactly where I left off, and sometimes it just starts playing automatically. And I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't want credit. So we both have different problems, but yeah.
Well, that's what you have when you've got something that's growing that rapidly, and you guys are adding. What let's So what's coming up though? Like, I know you can't share, any secrets with me unless you want to. But like, you guys, it seems like you're always doing something, tinkering with something. I know that recently you guys introduced sort of a live video feature.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the live video, I have to say. I love it. I just love it. And
I
I
haven't
love
played with it yet, but I did see some of the same, from some of the tests you guys were
I,
doing.
yeah, I love tuning in and just watching people use it. And it's usually because I don't, for some reason, I never took to Instagram live,
Yeah.
but I like the, I mean, obviously, you're kind of like, if you don't, I'm tooting our own horn, but there's something, I feel like the design has made it so that intimacy kind of carries in that. And it just, I have this big grin on my face that people cannot really see, but
I
even
see it. I know
on
it's there.
Sunday, like, I don't know. Noah Smith, who's an economist, did a live with Paul Krugman, who just started on Substack after all these years at the Times, and it was just such a casual thing, and with technical problems,
Yeah.
and we saw like Noah's little pet bunny, and like anyway, it was just like a very different image of or impression of them that I had until
Yeah.
that kind of, and it lasted for an hour, and people just talk and they forget that you're there, and I like that because it does, as I said, it just feels very intimate. And again, it's for your subscribers if you want to, or your paid subscribers. It's another, you can just log it just for them. But and that is coming on. Well, I don't know what I can share. I'm sure Liz is gonna kill me afterwards, but I'm sure you're the live video in different surfaces, let's say,
Okay.
very soon, along with other things. Who knows? At some point, I kept saying something that I think I totally made up, and I said it publicly a few times that this is coming, and I thought it was coming. So I'm
Yeah.
just going to say it one more time because why not? They're going to build it one day. But I think with AI, many things are going to open up for what is possible. You would be able to perhaps record just half a minute of your voice, and then automatically the whole voiceover, the accessibility
Yes.
kind of part is gonna just
I
be
like that. Yeah.
activated in
Yeah.
your own voice and tone rather than the robot voice.
Yeah.
Perhaps translation, in different languages
Oh,
is,
that would be excellent. Yeah.
I mean, these are not, I'm imagining things that are going to be made possible thanks to new technologies, basically. But
Yeah.
with video, already the transcript and all of that, all of these things really excite me that
Yeah.
they happen. You don't, you would need five different platforms to do things in the past.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that's why I'm out there preaching on behalf of you guys. I'm an evangelist for Substack out there because
Yeah.
the author community has been told since day one that you need a platform, you need to have a mailing list, you need to have some form of control over how you engage with your audience. And to do all that plus be able to make a buck off of it. It's
It
just
should
remarkable.
also always have been like that, and now technology,
It seems like it should have always been like
you
that.
know,
Yeah, you're right.
it should have been like that because
Yeah.
the person with the talent who creates the content should be the person that gets the lion's share,
Yeah.
the reward. But now
Totally
technology
agree.
has made that possible, so.
Well, that's excellent. All right. Well, I mean, we're at time, so I'm going to have to wrap us up, but I'm really excited about everything that's happening with Substack. I feel like I'm not all in enough yet. I need to be more all in. I think I'm going to start getting
Hopefully,
more
you're
all in with you guys.
convinced after this
Oh yeah,
conversation.
totally. Yeah, no, you've sold me. You've sold me. So,
Good.
thanks for joining us here. Is there anything anyone listening needs to know? I mean, if they want to find you guys, it's substack.com. That one's easy, but is there anything anyone needs to know about, getting started or whatever?
Just go on notes and get started. Start a Substack. Don't wait. Don't put it off. There's no reason to. You won't regret it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Thank you very much, Sophia. I
Thanks.
appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
All right, so Sophia talks. This was a great interview, by the way, and I
Yeah,
love
thanks for asking
Substack.
my question. I
I did
appreciate
ask
that.
your question, and I'm a big, huge fan of Substack, so this was an easy one for me to dive into. But she talks a lot about owning your audience and having full control of your mailing list, which is something we tell people on the indie side. I don't know if this is something gets talked about much on the traditional side, JD, you'll have to tell me. But on the indie side, we're always telling authors, you need to own your audience. You need to own that list. Is this something, first of all, let's talk about that on the traditional side. Does that get talked about at all? But, how has that kind of thing, that independence changed your approach to what you're
It's
writing
getting
now?
talked about now. If you go back, a lot of the authors that I know, they've been doing this before there was an internet. So there was no mailing list. Everything was handled by the publishers. So then the internet came out and the publishers went ahead and created websites for their authors. So authors didn't have to take care of this. Then it started expanding beyond that and they created mailing lists for their authors. So their authors wouldn't have to take care of it. All of that is great unless you decide to make a change. You decide to go from HarperCollins over to Random House and then you realize HarperCollins owns your website, owns your mailing list, and every graphic you've ever had online is produced by their marketing department. So you can't take that either. And I've got a lot of friends that are basically in that boat. So over the last probably 10 years, they've tried to figure out how to shuffle away from that. And it's tricky because, if you've got a million subscribers on your HarperCollins email list that your publisher is already taking care of, how do you start a brand new one without tripping over the one that they've already, because they've got it dialed in. They're marketing every book you put out. So there's and they're still navigating that those waters. I think for today's authors, new authors, it's actually easier because it gets drilled into your head, right? Create a website, create a mailing list, do all those things. So it's really those people that are caught, from the older school authors, I think, that are really having trouble with this.
And honestly, I think that's one of the things I think I mentioned this in the interview, but that's actually something that is Substack is perfect for is if you don't even know where to start, if you don't have the budget, if you can't do it yourself, you could create basically a free website, a free mailing list, free podcast, all those things in one spot. And you could even get paid for it if you did it right. So it's a great starter kit at least. But
Now, let me ask you a question though. Like, as somebody who's doing that, are you worried about having all your eggs in that one basket? Like, what if something happens to Substack and all of a sudden your website, mailing list, and your
right.
podcast are
So my, I have my own website on that I built on Squarespace. So that seems to have some longevity. If I were relying solely on Substack, the great thing is you still own the list. So you can download that list in anytime you want. And I do once a month, I sync it up with my other, I use author email. So I sync those two up. It's a manual process because there's no like API to do that yet. I'm kind of hoping they'll get around to that. But you still own that list no matter what. So that's the part that matters. The content, you're probably going to have copies of that unless you just typed it directly into Substack. But I keep backups of everything. So if I ever had to, I could reconstruct it. I'm not sure. I think you might even be able to export, entries and podcast episodes and things like that from Substack. I'm not sure on that one, but the point I'm making though is like they really have gone out of their way to make sure that you are not putting all your eggs in one basket, that you are safe to entrust that with them because you still own all of it. They've been real big on that ever since the start.
And just like in general, you should never type your content directly into a platform.
You
Always,
shouldn't. I mean, I did for
never.
years, and I know why you shouldn't.
Yeah. When I
But
started doing serial fiction, they're like, you can type it directly in. I'm like, no, that's no, that's just a no.
One of the things that I did notice on Substack when I was messing with it is they've actually got a plugin. So if you were to upload video to Substack, you can also post it through Substack onto YouTube. like all at once. So they've got plugins in place to help you propagate other platforms, which is good. I just get a little nervous with any of these kind of things because I've been doing this for a long time, and like I've seen people go from, like MySpace, MySpace disappears, everybody's on Facebook. Facebook disappears, everybody's on Instagram. A lot of people were using Patreon, now they're moving off Patreon to Substack. So there's always going to be another thing coming, and you need to make sure you can get your content out of there. When that happens, it's very possible they could stick around forever. That would be fantastic. But I have yet to see a platform that actually does that.
I do like that she said, don't try to hack it because there's like no algorithm to learn. Because I do think that's one of the most annoying things about a lot of like social media and other like platforms is that it's not about the content. It's about like who can master
That's
the
right.
invisible
That's
robot the
that's
best.
the problem I keep having with YouTube. And I've got a lot of friends who have huge YouTube channels, and it's a constant churn. Like some of them have like 2 million subscribers, and they still, if they don't post a video like every day, they start losing traction immediately. And so you're always serving the algorithm gods.
Yeah, you become a slave to the algorithm, which then I think that's why, like, depending on who you talk to, like some writers hate that they have to do social media, because it's just it's if it doesn't come natural to you and you're not like, oh, this will be funny and it's just something that comes naturally, it's very hard. And I imagine like with newsletters, I mean, I subscribe to various newsletters from authors, some through Substack, some just through their own newsletters. But, they're not, some are very consistent, it comes out once a week. Others are very haphazard, which I imagine is just the nature of writing, right? Like you're busy writing a book and then you're in the editing process. Like maybe you don't have something to say right then. So I do like that Substack at least makes that a little bit more.
She's like, there's no, you have to be authentic, right? The BS detector is high in
She
the
said,
audience.
doing your thing is what works with Substack. That was the quote I grabbed, and it's that authenticity is key. That's the part that attracted me, because if I can't just do my own thing, if I've got to somehow put on a mask and do a dance, and I have to TikTok dance my way through this whole thing, it's not going to end well for any of us. I'm going to summon some sort of demon. It's just inevitable. But if I can get on there and talk about the things that I'm interested in, whatever those happen to be, and it's so interesting to me, I've been making a concerted effort over the past couple of months to make sure that what I'm writing syncs up with the kind of things I write about in fiction. So like I write a lot about archaeology and science and and technology, and I try to do it in such a way that it resonates with my audience, and that's done well. But I've also done posts where I talked about some road trip I took, or some maybe my water heater went out or something. I've done
Or you're
that, and those have
fixed.
done just as well, and some of them do better than that
Well, I
content.
think, I mean, you've been doing this for a while and you're consistent with it, and I think that's what's important. Like it's okay, I guess, to be the guy who puts one out, this week, and maybe not another one for another month, and then all of a sudden you put three out in a week. Like those people do that, and I guess it works for some of them, but I think just being steady with it, one post a week, and just every week over and over, like that's what people count on. They begin to expect it, and I think that's what, you got to be dedicated to it just like anything else.
I also like that she said intimacy carries in a live video. So when are we doing a live podcast? I guess we did it last year at Authors Nation, right? We
Yeah, we
did.
did do a
Yeah, we
live
did
one,
do a
that's
live
for sure.
one.
And that wasn't even our first one, apparently. JD said they did one before the three of
Oh,
us came
like
along.
way, yeah, right when you
Oh
started.
yeah, long time ago.
Pre-K days, pre-Kevin. The hang
Wow.
up on pre-K. The hang up with the live video right now for me is that it's entirely on your mobile device. It's not available via the
Laptop yet.
So that's a challenge for me, only because I want my good microphone, and I want, I want my lighting, I want all that stuff. And I suppose I could probably make it work on the mobile platform, but
Yeah, you're gonna invite us all for a coffee clatch. Ask me
we'll do that.
anything,
I mean, I
whatever.
do live streams and stuff every now and then anyway. We could always do a live. I can set up a live stream for
There
us,
you go.
no problem.
Might be fun. All right. I guess I should ask with that, JD, who's up next week?
Next week, we've got Alma Katsu coming back on. Alma's a former CIA and NSA intelligence agent turned novelist. She's also a personal favorite writer of mine. She walks the line between horror and thrillers. Her books are always fantastic. And her latest novel is called Fiend, which releases September 16th. So she's going to tell us about it. Alma Katsu.
Sounds great. If you'd like to be notified as soon as new episodes publish, make sure you go to writersincpodcast.com and sign up now. We'll see you next episode and have a great week of writing.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Writers Inc. Access the show notes and leave a comment at writersincpodcast.com.